And thank you for joining us this evening. My name is Dennis O'Neill. I'm a physician in private practice and the current chair of the Board of Trustees of Eastern Connecticut Health Network. ECHN is a valuable asset to the Eastern Connecticut community. And after nearly 3 years of review, consideration, due diligence, and determination to strengthen ECHN's future, a selection has been made to preserve ECHN through a proposed acquisition by a newly formed joint venture between Tenet Healthcare Corporation and Yale New Haven Health Systems. This decision was made through the engagement of the community governance structure of trustees and corporators associated with ECHN, which includes representatives of our medical staff. The Board of Trustees voted unanimously recently to pursue an acquisition of ECHN by the newly formed joint venture. And this decision was also supported by the ECHN corporators with a 91% favorable vote to move forward in pursuance of the proposed transaction. Additionally, on May 7th, the Connecticut legislative session came to a close with a bill which has now been signed into law, allowing for hospital conversions in the state of Connecticut to continue. This allows ECHN to move into the next phase of the transaction process, which includes a regulatory process as governed and outlined by the state and federal governments. You'll hear more about this phase throughout the evening. Now, to review some of this evening's agenda and the statutory requirements associated with this public forum, I'll hand it over to Dennis McConville, the Chief Strategy Officer of ECHN. Dennis?
Thank you, Dennis, and good evening, everyone. And thank you for coming this evening. ECHN is hosting two public hearings, one here tonight in Manchester and another tomorrow evening, June 24th, at the Vernon Senior Center in the Rockville section of Vernon, Connecticut. The hearings are to provide information about our proposed transaction contained in the Certificate of Need Determination letter that was filed with both the Office of the Attorney General and the Department of Public Health, Office of Healthcare Access, on June 4th of 2014. Our agenda this evening is as follows. I'll take a few moments to present the purpose of the hearing, the statutory requirements that we believe apply to our proposed transaction, and let you know the format for your participation in this hearing. Peter Carl, our President and CEO, will then present information about the healthcare landscape for ECHN, the rationale for pursuing our transaction with Tenet Healthcare Corporation and Yale New Haven Health System, and the process that ECHN followed. Then Joyce Tichy, who is ECHN's Senior Vice President and Legal Counsel, will present the letter of determination, and then we'll have a comment, question, and answer period for you with our panel. For the panel or Q&A portion of the hearing, we're laying out some guidelines for that portion of the hearing. We've conducted public hearings for our proposed transaction in the past. Some of you may have attended, both at the Rockville High School and here at Manchester Hospital. With the changes to the CON statute, we want to conduct this evening's hearing in a very precise manner. Therefore, it will be more structured. It will require that we take some time before we open the floor to comments or questions to address the letter of determination and related matters. I anticipate this will take about 45 to 50 minutes. This hearing is a legal requirement for the state regulatory approval process. Tonight's presentation and question and answer period will be recorded, transcribed, and submitted to the State Department of Public Health, Office of Healthcare Access, and the Office of the Attorney General. We ask that you sign in if you wish to comment or ask a question of the panel regarding the letter of determination. If you've not signed in and wish to speak, please see Nina Cruze in the back of the room to sign in. If you signed up to testify, I will call your name to come up to one of the podiums in the front, one of the microphones in the front, to make your statement or to ask your question. Before you begin your testimony, I'll ask you to please state your name and your town of residence. In deference to allow everyone who wishes to speak, we request that each speaker limit their participation to one appearance at the microphone. And in the interest of time, we ask that you try to limit your comments to approximately 3 minutes or less to ensure time for all participants. Your statements or comments should be directed to the contents of the letter of determination. Copies of the letter of determination are available this evening for your review. The letter of determination and all filings will be made available on the Attorney General's website promptly after filing and on the OCA website as the process advances. Our focus this evening is the letter of determination, which describes a proposal for the transfer of the assets of Eastern Connecticut Health Network and its affiliates to VHS Eastern Connecticut Health System, LLC, a joint venture to be formed between Tenet Healthcare Corporation and the Yale New Haven Health Services Corporation. The first step in the process is the filing of a letter of determination. Within 30 days of filing the letter of determination, the nonprofit hospital and the proposed purchaser have to hold a public hearing on the contents of the letter of determination, which is why we're here this evening. Again, this evening's hearing is being recorded and transcribed as required. We'll make a recording of the transcription available to the Commissioner of the Office of Healthcare Access, the Attorney General, and members of the public upon your request. The Commissioner and the Attorney General will review the letter of determination, and it's the Attorney General who will determine whether the transaction requires approval under the so-called conversion statute as a conversion from a nonprofit to a for-profit company. A joint review process then ensues and is undertaken by the Commissioner and the Attorney General. The Certificate of Need approval process for hospital conversions is governed by Connecticut law, and that law contains standards that the Attorney General and the Commissioner of Public Health must apply in rendering a decision for each application. The law also allows for each agency to engage experts to assist in the Certificate of Need process. The statute states that the Attorney General shall deny an application as not being in the public interest if the transaction is prohibited by Connecticut statutory or common law governing nonprofit entities, trust, or charities. If the applicant fails to exercise due diligence in deciding to transfer the assets, the selection of a purchaser, obtaining a fairness evaluation, or in negotiating the terms and conditions of the transfer. The Attorney General shall deny the application if the nonprofit hospital failed to disclose any conflict of interest, or if the nonprofit hospital will not receive fair market value for its assets. By statute, the Commissioner of Public Health must also apply standards in reviewing and ruling on an application. The Commissioner must deny an application unless the community will be assured of continued access to high-quality, affordable care, accounting for any proposed change impacting hospital staffing. That a commitment has been made to provide care to the uninsured and underinsured. The proposal is also reviewed under standard certificate of need guidelines, including that there's clear public need, the impact on the financial strength of the health system in the state, whether the proposal will improve quality, accessibility, and the cost effectiveness of the healthcare delivery in the region. Now I'm going to walk you through an estimated timeline for the CON approval process. Some of these intervals are mandated by statute, and others are estimates, so they may change. The process begins with the filing of the letter of determination, which I mentioned we filed on June 4th. Within 30 days, we're required to hold hearings on the contents of the letter of determination. We expect that the Attorney General will rule that our proposed transaction is subject to the conversion statute, so we anticipate that we'll receive an application from the Attorney General's office and the Office of Healthcare Access within 45 days, bringing us to early August. Once we've received the application, we have 60 days to file a completed application, which gets us to an early October timeframe. The Attorney General's Office and OCA have 20 days to determine if the application is complete. If they identify deficiencies in the application, we'll receive what are known as completeness questions, and we estimate that it will take 20 more days to respond to those, and then 20 more days for those offices to respond to our answers to those completeness questions. We could see one or two cycles of completeness questions. It's not uncommon. We estimate that our application would be deemed complete somewhere between the November and March timeframe. Once deemed complete, the Attorney General and the Public Health Commissioner have 120 days to decide on the application. They'll hold public hearings during that 120 days, which will give the public an opportunity to make statements and after the application has been considered. We estimate that the overall process will take 9 to 12 months, which brings us out to somewhere between March and June of 2015. Joyce Tichy will be providing a more detailed information in a few minutes about the letter of determination, but we didn't want to go too far into the hearing without providing a summary of for the proposed transaction and letter of determination. The new joint venture between Tenet Healthcare Corporation and Yale New Haven Healthcare would buy ECHN. There would be continued operation of Manchester Memorial Hospital and Rockville General Hospital, continued involvement of an advisory board that includes community representatives, capital investments to improve facilities, equipment, and bring new programs to ECHN patients, a partnership with a leading academic medical center, and access to Yale New Haven Health System's clinical support, quality, and service line management, the establishment of a community foundation to oversee certain charitable assets, charitable funds, and a continuation of the ECHN brand and mission, including a continued commitment to charity care and indigent care. With that, I'd like to turn over the podium to Peter Carl, our president and CEO, who will talk about our process and some background information for you.
Thank you, Dennis, and thank you for joining us this evening. We are here to discuss the proposed transfer of assets of Eastern Connecticut Health Network and affiliates to VHS Eastern Connecticut Health Systems, LLC, which is a joint venture formed between Tenet Healthcare and Yale New Haven Health System. ECHN is proud to serve Eastern Connecticut by improving the well-being of the community by offering quality, compassionate health care. That is our mission, and our organization has pursued this mission for nearly 100 years. Our commitment to that mission is what we want to continue on behalf of our patients and their families, our physician, and our employees. We want to see the ECHN name and brand continue. We have made an obligation to training our next generation of physicians. We have developed strong relationships with our medical staff. We support the education of medical students and establish a new graduate medical education residency program at ECHN. Our two acute care facilities, Manchester Memorial and Rockville General Hospital, as well as dozens of affiliates and joint venture companies, are anchors in the regions we serve. ECHN is a significant economic engine, providing the salaries for over 3,000 skilled jobs and purchasing over $90 million in services and supplies each year. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is designed to provide insurance to 32 million Americans who are uninsured. Hospitals as an industry agreed that they would accept lower payments as more of their patients would now have some form of insurance. In Connecticut, unlike other parts of the country, residents are relatively well insured, so there is not the benefit of more revenue for our hospitals. We estimate that we need to reduce our expenses by 15 to 20%, which would mean cutting services and staff if we did not change. In addition, the governmental and commercial insurance are pushing for payment reforms that shift the risk for getting paid to providers like hospitals. The resulting new payment system rewards those who can deliver care at lower costs with improved quality and outcomes. This means we need to reform and refocus our delivery of care to patients well in the lowest cost settings, generally at home or in outpatient settings, preventing patients from needing expensive hospital stays. The focus on our patients' needs to be ongoing and proactive, not just in episodes of illness and hospital stays. The information about our patients needs to be accessible across providers across the network. Care management programs need to be expanded throughout the community. The investments needed to succeed with population health are major and difficult for organizations that are operating on extremely thin margins. As you can see here in this slide, in 2001, ECHN lost more than $10 million and continued to operate in the red for many years. During this time, the level of debt continued to rise. I took over nearly 10 years ago, and ECHN began to make course corrections, but it took 6 years to catch up, and we were forced to defer capital investments. You can see by the lower graph, the pension liability grew dramatically as a result in the pension funding reforms and at a time when the market crashed in 2008. Debt service and pension contributions consume a large portion of ECHN's annual cash flow and making capital investments extremely difficult. Hospital systems are extremely capital intensive. The cost for new medical and information technology are significant. The building codes for our facilities make improvements expensive. I mentioned population health and the need to share technology across the system. A new electronic medical record system will cost $20 million. There are programs that we would like to develop to address health needs that require capital investments. Private accommodations for our patients are not only about comfort and privacy, but they offer a safer environment for our patients. Again, hospitals are expensive to build or renovate. ECHN and all Connecticut hospitals are struggling with financial challenges associated with the reduction to government payments for services provided to our patients. Since we started on our journey to evaluate a partnership, more has happened that worsens our financial position. The state-imposed tax on hospitals that has been increased to $550 million in the current state budget. You can see that our tax burden grows, and it is significant because for a $330 million health system like we are, we have struggled to achieve a 1% to 2% margin, which is $3 to $6 million. That tax is much higher. ECHN, along with all other hospitals, also had to shoulder the financial impact of federal sequestration. Medicare provider payments have been cut by 2% since April of 2013. The Act requires federal spending cuts to be achieved over the course of 9 years so that the sequestration is expected to remain in place through 2022. Sequestration equates to a loss of more than $2.2 million each year for ECHN. Some of our reimbursement from the government is already at risk, and we are penalized if we don't meet certain benchmarks. We have done well and not incurred any penalties for readmissions to our hospitals. Additional threats to reimbursement are also on the horizon for the next fiscal year. ECHN is projected to have an additional $7 million financial burden to bear. As you can see here, the negative forces associated with the reduction in payment for services, coupled with the increased salary and non-salary costs, equate to an inability to reinvest in ECHN and an unsustainable future. In order to prepare for the future of ECHN, a workgroup of trustees, corporators, medical staff, and administrators was formed in 2011 to study ECHN's needs and the benefits that could come from partnering with another healthcare institution. After studying the national, regional, and Connecticut landscapes, along with ECHN's current and potential future position, it was decided that a partnership was in the best interest of ECHN. The partnering workgroup developed criteria into which to evaluate potential partners, including cultural and strategic fit, financial strength, and long-term viability, and the partner's interest to invest in our organization. The workgroup made their findings and recommendations to a committee of the Board of Trustees, the Transaction Committee. The committee conducted its due diligence and made the recommendation to the board to pursue a transaction with Tenet Healthcare Corporation and Yale New Haven Health System. The reasons to join another system are clear. We strive to create economic scale to decrease our costs. We want to improve access to capital and afford investments. We have to improve finances and reduce or eliminate our debt. And we have to prepare to participate in new payment systems to ensuring that we protect, preserve, and grow local access to healthcare services. Requests for proposals were sent to three non-profit health systems and three for-profit hospital operators. A very careful and thorough request for proposal process that included many meetings with each potential partner produced two viable offers. Both were from joint venture partnerships to acquire ECHN. The first, a joint venture between Hartford Healthcare and LHP, a for-profit, and the second, a joint venture between Yale New Haven Health and Vanguard Health System. When we learned that Vanguard Health Systems was to be purchased by Tenet Healthcare, we went back and performed more due diligence to confirm that a joint venture between Yale New Haven Health and Tenet Healthcare to acquire ECHN was still a good option. After careful due diligence, which included several additional rounds of questions and answers and additional meetings with the parties, the board selected the proposal from Tenet Healthcare and Yale New Haven Health as one that best met our needs and criteria for a partner. ECHN would be part of a strong regional healthcare system with an aligned mission, vision, and values. The network would offer the thought leadership from the best practices among almost 80 hospitals across the U.S. Yale New Haven Health will offer its clinical leadership and programs. Tenet has extensive experience with risk-based contracting, and Yale New Haven Health System are forming another joint venture to offer the support and services needed for value-based risk contracting. ECHN firmly believes that this partnership will allow us to continue to serve our mission. It will protect the accessibility and affordability of care for our patients while continuing our focus on the quality and safety of patient care. This will support our efforts to continuously improve satisfaction and will enable us to reinvest in programs, technology, facilities for the benefit of our patients. The key to this is preserving jobs and preparing for the future. Now I'd like to ask Joyce Tichy to walk you through some of the finer details associated with the letter of determination. Joyce?
Okay, we're going to be on this slide for a little while. Just to remind you, a couple of slides back, we're having a little trouble with it. All right, can you hear me now? Oh, yeah. Okay, a couple slides back, you were given a summary of the requirements that really drive the process for the certificate of need in Connecticut. And we've gone through, just to sort of track you back, we've gone through a couple of the criteria in the past presentations that Peter and Dennis did. So we're going to be required to show the state, the Attorney General, and OCHA, that we used due diligence in deciding to transfer and in selecting the purchaser. The next step that we're going to have to show is that we did a diligent negotiation of the terms and conditions of the transfer. And I'm going to talk about that. We also have to show that we were diligent in obtaining a fairness evaluation from an independent third party. We have to show that we are receiving fair market value for the assets being transferred. We also have to show, there's a long list of things we have to show, continuing access to high quality care, a commitment to the uninsured and underinsured on the behalf of the part of the buyer. We have to show that the financial strength of the system will be improved and that there will be improved quality, accessibility, and cost effectiveness. And we think we've done all of those things and we'll be showing the regulators these things. So first off, the description of the buyer, it's been mentioned a couple of times. But the name of the entity to be formed is VHS Eastern Connecticut Health System, LLC. It's going to be a company that's owned 80% by Tenet and 20% by Yale New Haven Health System. And as I proceed, since that's a kind of a long thing, I'll just call it the buyer pretty much my explanation. So this ultimately is the entity that's going to be the legal owner and will make the legally binding decisions for ECHN after the closing, which by our calculation is going to happen in more or less a year. The form of the transaction is an asset purchase. That's very common in this kind of transaction, and it basically means that the buyer is buying a list of assets, and as it, sort of the lingo goes, it's substantially all the assets of ECHN, including but not limited to. And we do have an 85-page agreement that backs all this up, and there's a long list of all the things that the buyer is going to buy. If you had got a copy of the Certificate of Need determination application, you can see there's a two-page description of all the entities that are being transferred. I'll just quickly summarize. The buyer's going to buy our two acute care hospitals, Manchester Memorial Hospital, Rockville General. It's going to buy Woodlake at Tolland, our subacute rehabilitation and long-term care facility. It's going to buy our much-beloved Visiting Nurse and Health Care Services of Connecticut, which is our visiting nurse and home care company. It's going to buy our insurance captive, and that is an entity that many hospitals have to hold basically the funds in order to pay our malpractice claims, which hospitals invariably have. It's also going to buy all the other entities that bear the ECHN name as you travel around in our community, our urgent care centers, our imaging centers, our labs, our physician offices. In addition to this, ECHN, again, like many other health systems, is part of various joint ventures with other entities in the area. Generally speaking, those are physician groups or other hospital systems, and we will transfer to the buyer our ownership interest in those entities, and they include two ambulance companies, a wheelchair transport company, an occupational health medicine provider, and others. We also have an entity called Medical Practice Partners, which is a billing and physician office administration company, and that one will be transferred as well. So what I've just described to you is not exclusive. If you want to look in on page 5 of 9 of the application, you can see the entire list. But I just want to give you a flavor of the nature of the transfer, what's going over to the buyer. Along with all of these things, the equipment, the property, the leases, and all the accounts receivable that you see that are part of our entities will go over as well. So along with this, the buyer has, as a result of some fairly robust negotiation between us and them, agreed to take on some very significant liabilities that we have. These are liabilities that when you do what we do, they are acquired in the normal course of business. And one of them is our unfunded pension liabilities, as Peter showed in the prior slide. That is something that many, many companies, including healthcare companies, have had trouble and struggle to keep up with, especially because the law changed and made the responsibilities much, much more severe. And the buyer has agreed to take on those liabilities. That's a very good solution and result for those of our employees and retirees who receive or are eligible for pensions. They've also agreed to take on our post-retiree health plan, the captive insurer liabilities that I just mentioned. They're taking those on, and our workers' compensation liabilities. All of these were the subject of, as I say, a very robust negotiation. And because these were liabilities that we had that the buyer did not have to take, there are adjustments to the purchase price to reflect the cost that would otherwise remain with ECHN had the buyer not agreed to take them on. Along with this, it's important to know that there are some key assets and liabilities that are not included in the transaction. Those include donor-restricted charitable contributions, that being when a donor gave money, donated money to ECHN or to our charitable foundation, and they gave it with a specified restriction. That cannot be transferred to another party. We need to basically deliver those funds over to the Attorney General, who will decide what to do with them. In addition, as in the normal course of business, there will be lawsuits. There always are lawsuits. And at some point, there will possibly arise lawsuits against ECHN for activities that we engaged in before the closing. And those are going to be obviously our responsibility. The buyer didn't cause them. So we're going to be continuing to be liable, have responsibility for those. There are other things such as cost report settlements, which are the cost report is a document that you exchange with Medicare. Medicare doesn't resolve these for a very long time. Since they relate to matters that are pre-closing, those are going to remain with us as well. And tax settlements insofar as there are any. Yet another thing that is not being transferred to the buyer are the cash and investments that ECHN holds. Those are basically going to be used to pay off our debts at closing, and our long-term debt remains with us. So we'll use our cash and investments to pay off our long-term debt, and insofar as necessary, a portion of the purchase price as well. So that's kind of what's in and what's out of the transaction. Next, I want to talk a little bit about our medical foundation. So this is something that's been in the news somewhat. So it actually was a subject of a negotiation resolution by the legislature. So just for you all to know, a medical foundation in Connecticut is an entity that's constructed in order to allow hospital systems to employ doctors. There's generally a rule that doctors can't employ work for a corporation because they're supposed to be following the rules of their medical license and not a company. But an exception is made for hospitals. There was a period of time where it was unclear whether, under Connecticut law, a for-profit entity could own hospitals. Most recently, on May 7th, there was a law passed by the legislature that allows for for-profit entities to own medical foundations. In order to ensure that those medical foundations operate in accordance with the goals that they're set up under, the legislature also created some governance requirements, including that a medical foundation for a for-profit system can't have any employee or representative of a not-for-profit on its board, And at the same time, the hospital system cannot be a member of more than one foundation. And it's a little hard to get your head around all this. I will just say that it has to do with a lot of political compromises about other things that are happening in other parts of the state, not here. And we don't need to worry about it except to say that the medical foundation that we set up will ultimately then be a tenant entity and will be governed by tenant representatives. So after the closing, to give you a sense on how things will look in the world and who's going to run ECHN, VHS, which is effectively going to be managed by Tenet, will provide the day-to-day supervision and management of the hospitals and the other ECHN businesses. Yale New Haven Health System will provide something that we think is absolutely significant and will be a great enhancement to our health system. It'll provide the clinical expertise that we so value to enhance and improve the services that we offer to the community. For example, vascular and in the area of vascular and perinatology services. We also expect and anticipate, and Yale New Haven system has promised to assist us in developing our service lines. So the next thing I want to talk about is the role of the local advisory board. So as I said earlier, the decision-making will reside with the buyer in this instance, but we advocated for and did receive on behalf of the community in the agreement that we have with the buyer, the creation of a local advisory board. There will actually be two advisory boards, one for each hospital. ECHN's board will appoint the members initially of this advisory board, but it will go on, obviously, for many years, and eventually the appointment process will be outside of the ECHN legacy board, which will eventually disappear. The initial makeup of that board will be five ECHN trustees and five others from the community identified by ECHN. And those are to include community representatives, physicians on the medical staffs, medical staff, and the hospital CEO. The role of this local board is going to be pretty essential. It's going to be an advisor to the buyer, the then existing entity, VHS, on how to spend this large capital commitment that the buyer has made to us, which I'll get to in a minute. It's going to assist with the development of a strategic business plan for ECHN and its goals going forward. It's going to be responsible for medical staff credentialing, which means to say the management and decision-making of what physicians come on to our medical staff. It will oversee the very important quality assurance processes that we are involved in, and it will oversee and manage our hospital's accreditation. In addition to these parameters, we also obtained from the buyer, consistent with the requirements of the Certificate of Need process, a commitment to maintain community support, charity care, and our continuum of care, which proceeds from the acute care all the way through to home care, nursing home care, and hospice. The buyer has agreed to maintain all of our policies on charity care, indigent care, community volunteer services, community outreach services, and to maintain our graduate medical education program with the University of New England College of Medicine, which we so value because we hope to grow physicians in our community. It's also agreed to maintain for 3 years our two acute care hospitals and their emergency departments, and to maintain the ownership interest in the NHSC, our nursing service, and our subacute and long-term care services at Woodlake and Tolland. all of these things we advocated for and negotiated for on behalf of the community so that we would have a robust continuing health system here. With respect to employment, this was another area that we focused on and negotiated for. We included requirements that the buyer accepted to employ substantially all ECHN employees prior to the closing on the day after the closing. Our employees will enjoy comparable benefits packages to what they had pre-closing. And very significantly, we carefully and thoughtfully extended out to a fairly significant far-out date our collective bargaining agreements with our four unions. And their expiration dates are now June 2018 for our Manchester Hospital RNs, May 2017 for our Manchester Service and Skilled Maintenance employees, June 2017 for our technical and LPN employees at Manchester Hospital, and December 2018 for the RNs at Rockville. Again, I just want to repeat, that was done in order to protect jobs, to make sure that this commitment will last for a significant period of time. The last thing I want to talk about on this slide, and I'm sorry for the length of time on it, is the capital commitment that we obtained, again, through a robust negotiation process with the buyer. In this capital commitment, the buyer has agreed to spend, after the closing, after they already are the owner, $75 million within the 5 years post-closing. Again, I just want to be clear, this is in addition to the purchase price. It's another $75 million on top. And it will pay for upgrades to the ECHN facilities and projects to improve our services. If you remember, there was a slide that Peter spoke to about all these needs that we have. They're very large and very costly needs due to our inability to access capital. They are growing, and we really do need the money for upgrades. So examples of the things that we will be spending, that the buyer will be spending the money on, are a renovation to our facilities, recruitment costs to bring in needed medical staff, the expansion of our clinical departments, the purchase of medical equipment and or electronic medical record system, and other things. So one thing just to be aware of that is that if a law or rule is passed or applied that discriminates against for-profit entities, the buyer has the ability to delay some of those investments. But if it does so, it has to confer with the local board, that board that I described, and explain why it needs to defer and kind of what the process will be for ultimately making those investments. When you file a CON, a Certificate of Need application, you have to explain to the regulator what kinds of changes are being requested to the services or the towns served. And this is for your information. There are no changes requested to either the services or the towns served as part of our initial application, or nor will there be at the time of the CON application. So I'm going to move to the next slide. I guess I do that right, Nina? Okay. So this is going to be a very quick walkthrough for you of kind of how the funds flow. Okay. So at the very top, you can see what I mentioned earlier. There are excluded assets, which are the donor-restricted funds, our cash and investments, our cost and our cost report settlement. So that sits there on the top. It's put aside. After you put that aside, the buyer has agreed to a purchase price as indicated in our letter of $105 million. This amount has been confirmed fair. I think if you may remember, I know this is a lot of stuff, but there is a requirement that we produce a fairness opinion. We have already done that by a nationally renowned entity named Duff and Phelps. They have issued a report indicating that these this payment is fair. It's based on an estimate of the future cash flow. So there's a various different ways that I know people are trying to grasp where does this number come from. But basically, what the analysis did was it said, again, speaking back to a slide earlier, the pressures involved in reduced reimbursement and additional costs, et cetera, based on those things and who we are and what we have access to now, this independent entity looked at our situation and said, again, based on the estimates of the future cash flow that we will likely be able to access, what is the value of this entity? And they came up with, basically, they looked at the number that we negotiated and concluded that it was fair. A number of different measures were used. I want to confirm to you that the report of Duff and Phelps, along with effectively everything else about this transaction, will be made available online on the internet by the Attorney General, and you will be able to read every word of it if that's of interest. In addition, there will be a process after the $105 million of deductions, and I mentioned them some the most significant of them earlier. The first thing after the So we start with $105 million. The first thing that happens is there will be a true-up, that is an adjustment to our net working capital. And that's a little technical of a phrase. But basically, just like your checking account, you know, you have to have enough money in it to pay your bills on an ongoing basis. That's the net working capital amount. And there's an estimate of it done early, and then that's got to be trued up to make sure that, you know, the amount there is acceptable and appropriate. After that, there will be reductions for the liabilities, again, that we already owe this money to others that the buyer has said they are willing to take on for us. So naturally, the price goes down, the payment goes down to reflect the liabilities that they're taking on. Those include the unfunded pension, the post-retiree health, the captive insurer liabilities, our workers' compensation liabilities, our employee benefits liabilities, if there are any, our capital leases and other things, and our asbestos liabilities. So those are the primary, you know, things that will reduce the price, will reduce the payment down below the initial 105. There will be a remaining amount then that will be combined with the cash and investments that, if you remember, are not included in the sale. And that combined amount will be used to pay off our long-term debt. Again, hospitals all have long-term debt. That's basically part of the nature of running the business. Just like when you bought your house, you had to pay the mortgage. We have to pay the bondholders, and they'll be sitting there ready to take their money on the day of the closing. After that, there will be a certain amount of money then left. That will then be, part of it will be put into an indemnity reserve, which is basically it's a fund, it's a bank account put to the side to cover any liabilities that nobody's thought of. We don't know that they're going to happen. They just emerge after the closing because, remember, we won't be here anymore. So that is, the old ECHN won't be here anymore. I mean, the entity will be here. And so there has to be a fund to pay off those liabilities going forward. Whatever is left after that will go to a community and a foundation of some kind. The Attorney General will define what that is. We will make suggestions, but ultimately it will be the Attorney General's decision on where those funds go. Now, then, after the closing, there, as I mentioned, will be the $75 million capital commitment that still remains, and that will be something that will be used to enhance ECHN and its facilities and services going forward. So the only thing I just want to add at the end is this little asterisk down on the bottom. We think this is a very good deal for ECHN and for the community. Let me just repeat that. We think this is a very good deal. However, something could happen. That being, if there's a material change to the business, assets, liabilities, financial conditions, or result of operations of ECHN, the buyer has the ability not to complete the transaction. In addition, we have to be sure to have that medical foundation created. That's a condition to closing. And as with any large transaction of this kind, there are many other closing conditions. And, you know, it goes on for pages and pages. That's what these things do. And we have to just make sure that we meet all of our obligations in order to close. So the last thing I want to say is, just as I'm closing, is to give you the sense and the understanding that every single step of everything we've done from the very beginning of this process was with the understanding that it would be transparent and independently verified. We have the Duff and Phelps fairness opinion. We have the outside audit of our financial statements. We have actuarial reports that explain what our pension and retiree health obligations are. These are numbers fixed by independent other people, not us. Now the Attorney General and OCA will do yet another independent review, and each of them will hire independent experts that we pay for in order to look at us and the numbers again. So that's just to give you a sense that there is an independent eye looking at every one of the things that we're saying tonight. That's all I have.
Well, thank you, Joyce. Now we're on to that part of the hearing where you, the public, are allowed to make your statement or ask your questions with regard to the letter of determination. Let me just remind you of some of the guidelines that we have set up for this portion of the hearing. You must sign in if you wish to comment or ask a question of the panel regarding the letter of determination. If you've not signed in and wish to speak, please see Nina in the back of the room and she will sign you in. If you signed up to testify, I will call your name. Please come up to one of the microphones. We'll move them out a bit. And make sure you state your name and your town of residence. In deference to allowing everyone to speak, we request that each speaker limit your participation to one appearance at the microphone. And in the interest of time, we ask that you try to limit your comments to approximately 3 minutes or less in order to ensure time for all participants. Again, your statement should be directed to and questions the contents of the letter of determination. If you've signed in to testify but you've changed your mind, when I call your name, just say no comment. If you've prepared written, legible testimony and the hour is growing late, you may leave your testimony with Nina and we'll make sure that it gets into the record. With that, I'd like to announce our panel for this evening. I'd like to call up in addition to Peter Carl and Joyce, who have presented already this evening, we have Gail Capozzalo, who is Executive Vice President and Chief Strategy Officer for Yale New Haven Health System, Vin Petrini, Senior Vice President for Public Affairs for Yale New Haven Health System, Trip Pilgrim, Senior Vice President and Chief Development Officer for Tenet Healthcare Corporation, and Eric Wexler, Senior Vice President for Tenet Healthcare Corporation, the Northeast region. And I would like to invite you all to come up to the stage. And if we could turn off the presentation, please. Do we have enough? Can we get some light up here? We're not going to have them sit in the dark, are we? All right. Okay, the first person I'd like to call to the microphones. Is Melody Peters, please.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm very happy to see that I'm not talking to a wall, that there are actual people there. I am not a resident of this community, but I have huge buy-in to this community. My name is Melody Peters, and I'm the president of AFT Connecticut, and we are a diverse union of 29,000 public and private sector members. We're very proud to represent over 700 members, both in Manchester and Rockville Hospital. Tonight, I'm pleased to be joined by, if you excuse me for a second, the leadership of those Manchester locals are sitting in the back. And I must say that I'm quite proud of them, because they really do have, as you all do, the intention of quality care and access to care in this community. That's Anne-Marie Serra. She's president of the RNs. Melanie Karpinski. She's president of the Service and Skilled Maintenance Employees. And Darcy Cowles, who's president of the Technical Unit. And they're also joined by, and no stranger to some of you up here, our very capable and able field staff. Neil Alper. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this evening. I have given a full testimony to the AG's office, and I have, in the interest of jet lag and conversations that we will continue to have, I have cut down my testimony so that it's not quite as yawning. But we are very, very excited to be here tonight. To discuss this proposal. AFT Connecticut recognizes that the healthcare landscape is quickly changing and that ECHN has decided that the only path to long-term financial stability as well as access to healthcare in this community is to abandon nonprofit status and move to a for-profit healthcare corporation. I might add that AFT Connecticut has been on this right from the beginning in terms of we understand to sustain health care in this state that we are going to have to move to a for-profit system in some cases. As health care professionals with a responsibility to advocate for our patients, their families, and our communities, we're concerned about preserving the patient access to health quality care and protecting the commitment to the community service programs that we've come to expect from ECHN. We want our ECHN hospitals to continue to be responsive to these concerns and provide access to all, not just to those who can afford to pay for profitable service. For these reasons, we strongly urge all actors in this proposed transaction to act openly, honestly, and transparently by engaging stakeholders, not shareholders. And I will say that we have that relationship with ECHN now. I'm from practically day one. And I believe that we're all blessed by that. They also initiated substantive discussions with union representatives about their intentions. This process allowed for a frank, sometimes contentious labor management dialogue, which allowed the fundamental needs and interests to each party to be clarified and communicated at the earliest stages of the process. Ultimately, this process resulted in a number of significant changes in existing collective bargaining agreements, and perhaps more importantly, to the extent allowed by Tennant and Yale, will continue to provide an important line of communication between ECHN and its employees throughout the transition. And I have no doubt in my mind that that dialogue will continue, because we took a blood oath, did we not? During the discussions of the collective us, we agreed to do community forums even before the new law was enacted. And to ECHN's credit, they hosted two forums in May and April to explain their intentions. Some concerns we have merit more serious discussions during the process, and they are Community Oversight Board. The CON determination legal notice mentions that establishment of a local advisory board, and I believe that it was mentioned in the presentation. And it really is a board of trustees to serve as a resource on capital investment, maintenance, implementation of strategic business plans, medical staff credentialing, quality assurance, so forth and so on, comprised of physicians, individuals drawn from the local community. In theory, this sounds great. But we really would like members of the board should be independent voices that represent all stakeholders. And because I'm an advocate for organized labor and our healthcare providers, I would certainly would not object to having members of the staff on this board. Legislative efforts were rejected last month. And I know that you mentioned that there was some parts of the legislation that was negotiated out, negotiated in, so forth and so on. And I will take issue with your comment about the foundations. And sometime I would love to have a conversation with you about that. That's probably different than what you expressed. But all right, so that's the way the ball rolls in the Capitol. I know I spent 12 years in the Senate up there, and it's. You don't want to see sausage being made, right? But we think that this is an important part of the bill that allows for real, true community input. And we would like to see the AG's office reconsider that part in his deliberations. Another part is the independent monitoring. Efforts to create and fund an independent monitor for the hospitals also went down the tubes. Such a role would ensure that ECHN and its partners live up to the terms of the approved conversion and keep the promises they've made to the community. I think it would be a great move. Establishing an independent monitor would ultimately facilitate dialogue between the hospitals, the patients, communities, and the Attorney General, the Department of Public Health, creating a mechanism for success. Because we have learned through our efforts, that working in coalition does bring about success for everybody. So we would urge the Attorney General to do that. A couple more and I'm done. Charitable care and community benefits. Proposals were also rejected during the legislative session that would have required hospitals to undergoing conversion to establish written agreements detailing minimum levels of spending on charitable and uncompensated care, community outreach, and volunteer services. We call on ECHN and its partners to establish a detailed, definitive written community benefits agreement voluntarily. I mean, that's really, in my mind, good faith. But urge the Attorney General to require it as a condition if this is not done. The last one is unemployment. Employment, oh my goodness, I said unemployment, which we could all be if this doesn't work out, right, is the employment. You were correct in saying that, in fact, the CON legal notice promises efforts and offers employment to substantially all ECHN employees with salaries and benefits consistent with other tenant employees. And we're very grateful because we know that landscape. We've formed relationships, and they're relationships that I think that are built on trust. Given our collaborative relationship with ECHN, we urge tenant and Yale to not only honor the existing collective bargaining agreements through their duration, but to recognize that there's real benefit to this community, to the workforce, to working families in this community, to continue to bargain in the future. In conclusion, there is much ECHN and its corporate partners can do to protect the communities they serve as they attempt to convert from nonprofit to for-profit status. We ask that they proactively address the issues outlined in my testimony, and you have received a copy of it beforehand, and seize the opportunity to establish true partnerships with all stakeholders. Understanding that we don't always agree on everything, and we don't, but we have found a way to get through that. I really appreciate the partnership that we have. We have established this in good faith with ECHN, and we would very much like to see that continue. It is only by working collaboratively that we will succeed, and I thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you, Melody. Next, I'd like to call on Gary Silverman.
Thank you. I'm going to keep this on a...
Please state your name and your...
Gary Silverman. I live locally in Glastonbury.
Thank you.
I want to say thank you with all the humility and appreciation for the stewardship from Peter, Dennis, Nina. Unfortunately, my family, immediate, extended, my employees, as well as I, have had to use the hospital numerous times. It's a small-town hospital with a big-time deliverance of execution with humanity. Selfishly speaking, I think it's one of the wisest decisions to partner with Yale and Tenet. I don't know much about Tenet, but Yale is one of the finest hospitals in the country. So now I've got Yale in my front yard, my backyard, my side yard, with a pretty damn big checkbook. It doesn't get much sweeter. It really doesn't. I'm not trying to make a philosophical statement. It's just reality. And it wouldn't have come to fruition without the stewardship, leadership of what I've seen over the past several years. Look what Manchester has done. It's a small town hospital, the Quattro Cancer Center, Da Vinci Epicenter Robot Surgical Center. Advances in the behavioral unit that took it from one flew over this cuckoo's nest to someplace that you're proud to have your family come and receive the help it needs. I'm sure there are other things that I've left off. There are many other services. And unfortunately, I've used the emergency room more than I care to think about. And the doctors know me there and know my son. So thank you. It wouldn't have happened. I support your decision. I applaud all the thankless, and tireless, and effortless jobs you do to make this come to fruition. And I embrace it totally. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your kindness and services.
Thank you, Gary. Next, I'd like to call on Joe Tyler.
Gee, I feel like I'm going to rain on the parade here. Joe Tyler, 165 Oak Forest Drive, Manchester, Connecticut. I'll be frank. I do not think you folks have done proper due diligence and fiduciary responsibility. When you put your chart up there on the institutions you looked at the last hearing, I asked Mr. Carl if they looked at any nonprofit operations or entities outside of the state of Connecticut who might have possible interest in coming into Connecticut, and the answer was no. I also contacted some nonprofits outside of the state of Connecticut, and they hadn't heard that Eastern Connecticut Hospital Association was for sale or anything else in the way of proposals. Now, I know I'm going to hear excuses for this, but the fact that this wasn't done, regardless of your excuse, to me, does not fulfill responsibility for fiduciary and due diligence. Secondly, the financial arrangements of what the officials, in whatever way you want to call them, exit cost or the golden handshake or whatever you want to call it, has not been made public. And this raises all kinds of suspicions as to what's going on in that area. And when you talk about having an open process, I think that that needs to be corrected. Thirdly, on local taxes, some of the local officials have not probably gotten involved as much in this process because of the fact that they see that, well, we're going to get tax money out of this. My question to them is, when you're dealing with a for-profit, what are you going to do when they come to you and threaten to leave town if you don't eliminate their tax bill or cut it back or rearrange it? What are you going to do then? And the fourth issue is Yale having only 20% stake in this. Now, I am a big fan of Yale, okay? My wife, Sue Tyler, taught at Manchester High School for 36 years. She was part of the first group of women to be officially admitted to Yale in the summer of 1966 to take official classes at Yale. This is before they admitted the students full-time in 1969. So I'm a big fan of Yale, but I think this would be a lot better if Yale, instead of having 20% stake, had like 50% stake, because now that they no longer have to use the Yale Medical Foundation and they can use their own foundation, what do they need Yale for? Okay? And somebody really ought to think hard about that. I mean, I know there's all kinds of commitments and nice verbiage about what Yale's going to do and stuff like this. But just remember, they've only got 20% stake in this, and they can be terminated out of this very easily. And then the question is, what if Tenet, you had this long list of commitments that they made to you. What if the name of being a profit-making company, that they renege on these commitments? Because after all, the bottom line is their only accountability is to their shareholders. Okay? They can sign anything they want with you folks, and at some point they can say it isn't in the interest of our shareholders and they can renege on it. Where are you then? Because you're dealing with a for-profit operation and their responsibility is first and foremost to make a profit. And therefore they usually either they raise cost or they cut services in the process. I think one of the biggest problems in this whole thing is the fact that I don't think enough real attention was paid to this whole issue of profit versus nonprofit institution. And by the fact that you folks did not go to any nonprofit operations outside of Connecticut, I don't care what the excuse is, what the assumption was, it didn't happen. And it should have happened. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tyler. Next, I'd like to call on Chris Buchholz.
Good evening. My name is Chris Buchholz. I'm a resident of Glastonbury, Connecticut, and I'm also a community volunteer for ECHN since 2007. I believe a strong local healthcare institution benefits the community in many ways beyond healthcare services. A healthcare network like ECHN is an integral part of the cultural fabric of our communities, offering opportunities for volunteerism, educational programs, sponsorship events, and social services for the less fortunate. ECHN is a significant employer and a major contributor to the economic health and vitality of our community. As much as I might like ECHN to remain independent and stay exactly as it is today, I realize that is not possible due to changes in the healthcare industry. A healthy and vibrant community requires a healthy and vibrant healthcare institution. Therefore, I support the asset sale to Tenet Healthcare Corporation and the partnership with Yale New Haven Hospital System as a way to maintain and enhance our local healthcare network. I think Yale is a great partner, and I don't think you could find a better partner. Yale is a premier health network, and I know from personal experience their commitment to excellence. 18 months ago, my father was diagnosed with cancer. He was a patient of the Smilow Cancer Center at Yale. Though he ultimately passed away, I can testify that he received high quality and compassionate care. I was impressed by Yale's commitment to his physical, mental, and emotional well-being. The teamwork and communication by the medical staff and the medical team, and the respect they showed both my father and our family. Compassion, commitment, teamwork, communication, respect, these values sound very familiar because these are the values that ECHN also aspires. I think this partnership will further enhance the mission of ECHN and further contribute to the health and vitality of our community. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chris. Next, I'd like to call on Lynn Ide.
I'm a little shorter. Good evening. My name is Lynn Ide. I'm the Director of Advocacy at the Universal Healthcare Foundation of Connecticut. We're a statewide nonprofit philanthropic organization, and we're dedicated to achieving quality, affordable healthcare for every resident of the state of Connecticut.
Excuse me, Lynn, and where do you live?
I don't live in the area. I live in Willimantic. Our office is in Meriden. We're statewide.
Yeah.
Universal Healthcare Foundation of Connecticut is concerned about the accelerated activity around nonprofit hospitals converting to for-profit ownership, while so many other changes are happening in our healthcare system. If we are serious about transforming our health system to focus more on the health of people and communities, and to focus more on improving quality while lowering costs, we must have health systems that are held accountable to the residents of this state. Handing ownership off to a company from outside Connecticut that is answerable first and foremost to Wall Street does not seem like a recipe for accountability. We're very concerned about this deal, and we have a few points in the interest of time. I'm not going to talk much about each of them. I'm just going to list these bullet points. We believe that this proposal must be evaluated and approved or denied based on several factors. First, we think there should be the completion of an independent, comprehensive community impact assessment, which, in addition to other indicators, includes community health indicators and the commitment to make progress in improving community health outcomes, including consideration of the State Department of Public Health State Health Improvement Plan and the Chronic Disease Plan, the State Innovation Model Process, achieving health equity for underserved populations, and any specific local public health priorities. Second, the provision of and funding for an independent third-party monitor with clear public reporting and public hearing requirements. Third, the guarantee of open, transparent, accountable processes throughout, leading up to approval of this or denial of this, and if it is improved after the conversion takes place. Four, the requirement that if a conversion to for-profit status occurs, Tenet Healthcare will conduct a community health needs assessment every 3 years, which is required by the Affordable Care Act for nonprofit hospitals, but not for for-profit hospitals. We'd like that Tenet agree to do this. Fifth, the protection against offloading less profitable patient care to nonprofit hospitals in the area or the state's John Dempsey Hospital. the creation of an independent community oversight board made up of diverse stakeholders that are not appointed by ECHN or Tenant Healthcare, which shall receive reports from the independent monitor. And lastly, the requirement that all public accountability, health impact, and transparency provisions of an ECHN conversion to Tenant Healthcare in that deal be honored if future sales occur. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to call on Bob Rodner.
Evening. My name is Bob Rodner. I'm actually a retired physician. I retired a year and a half ago from the medical staff here. My perspective is that I joined the medical staff in 1975, and I served on a committee that ultimately established ECHN from the two entities, Manchester and Rockville. And our deliberations at that time with Mike Gallagher and Gus Boardman really paralleled what has happened here again, although dealing with the financial problems at that time, the for-profit relationship was sort of the last one on the list. And like most speakers here, we did everything we could to avoid that and hoping to delay it as much as possible. So here we are now, maybe 15 years later, and have delayed it, but it does appear that the inevitable has come. I have observed the process that's taken place, and I'm certainly very impressed by the efforts of the board and the search committee to find suitable partners. I think we all would prefer to keep this as a nonprofit entity and with control in our local community, but the need for capital becomes paramount because, in my opinion, and I can't imagine anyone would disagree, in this day and age, if a hospital entity sort of stagnates, it's basically going downhill. So that without the investment in the technology and resources and personnel that advance the mission here, you sort of have a losing battle. So having said all of that, I do have a concern and a question to the for-profit entity. I think we're all aware of some of the past history of the for-profit, and we're also aware of many instances where for-profit entities have abused the system of encouraging overuse of health care and overuse of procedures and diagnostic modalities and treatment modalities. So I obviously this isn't a question and answer session, but I do address the representative from Tenant to ask how can this community be assured, both as a medical staff and as a community of users, that the overriding policies of Tenant as a for-profit entity won't result in medical decision-making that becomes abusive of the community.
Just for the record, Trip Pilgrim is going to take the question.
Thank you for your question, Doctor. Appreciate it. One of the things we like to how we like to characterize ourselves as a company is, judge us by our behavior, don't judge us by our tax status. And yes, you can go back through the history, and even our own company have had issues in the past where we've done things that we've had to atone for. But if you look back in history, you'll see there are just as many not-for-profits that have done the same kind of things. You had AHRF in Philadelphia. Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas is under a Medicare, you know, corporate integrity agreement. So you've seen behavior on both sides of the tax status equation. So I would say to you that just historically you can find, you know, bad behavior everywhere, and that's unfortunate. Now, how do you get comfort in our company today that we provide health care in, you know, the right amount, the right place, the right time, in a compliant fashion? And I think what I'd like to just point to is transformation that Tenet has undergone over the last 10 years. And today, we are widely recognized by independent third-party organizations that rate companies, not just in healthcare, but across, you know, all industries, for corporate governance and corporate compliance. And every year in the last 4 or 5 years, we've rated in the top deciles, quartiles, whatever, for governance and compliance. And one of the great measures of a highly compliant organization is that they find things. And we have 80 hospitals, 103,000 employees. Does that present an opportunity for something happening somewhere in the company that's not necessarily compliant? And the answer is yes. And we're proud of the fact that we have a compliance program that identifies it, that roots it out, that corrects it, and then moves forward. And that's the commitment we've made in all the communities we serve. And so I think that's you look at how we've transformed as a company, you look at our commitment to compliance, look at our commitment to governance, and I think that's where you'd find comfort.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to call on Tom Swan.
I've got some remarks, but I just first want to start by saying, Tripp, that was very slick.
I'm sorry, just state your name and your
comment. Yeah, good evening. My name's Tom Swan. I'm the executive director of the Connecticut Citizen Action Group. CCAG is a statewide membership-based organization that has been working on healthcare for over 40 years here in Connecticut. In addition, as a Coventry resident, I, like hundreds of our members, of CCAG's members, live in the ECHN service area and have actually taken advantage of some of the services here. I want to start by expressing our appreciation for your commitment in keeping the community engaged to date. Having said that, I want to make clear we have very serious reservations about the sale of our community hospitals to the Tenet Corporation. And I'm worried about what the continued consolidation of hospitals and medical practices in Connecticut will have on access, cost, and quality. Let's be clear. Tenet is looking to purchase hospitals and provider practices in Connecticut to make money. There is no altruistic purpose. And furthermore, from our perspective, Yale New Haven's participation only causes additional concerns. The money they plan to make has to come from either payers, the public, providers, workers, or patients. It has to come from one of those. Some areas that we believe must be addressed as part of the ECHN's board's fiduciary responsibility, which is a criteria the Attorney General must analyze in his review, include the Community Advisory Board. What's the real powers will this board have to ensure that the mission of the ECHN nonprofit hospitals are continued in terms of healthcare access, affordability, and quality? The way that you have proposed for the members to be chosen and the makeup with the conflict of interest by people being employees of Tenet or the new corporation being formed is not acceptable to us and doesn't pass the smell test. What protections will there be in terms of conflict of interest and independence from the acquiring corporations? The resulting corporation from any sale needs to clearly delineate in measurable and enforceable language a community benefits agreement that includes their commitment to meeting our community's health needs, improving health status of the residents in the area, and the economic vitality of the region. This includes fulfilling the community health needs assessment that nonprofit hospitals are required to do under the Affordable Care Act. The proposed resulting medical foundation could be very disruptive to the relationships of patients and their providers. What may be the impacts on the patient-provider relationship for patients who provider chooses not to be part of the foundation? Will all payment arrangements be publicly disclosed and shared with the community board? The growing incidences of charging patients facility fees and reclassifying people who use hospital facilities as being under observer status are unnecessary schemes to shift more cost onto healthcare consumers. What protections will this board put in place to make sure that services remain affordable, especially for people on limited income and people using publicly supported health care, and that the public, we are not left vulnerable to such schemes? What's the level of resources and information that will be provided for an independent monitor to review the activities of the new corporate entity, its progress on meeting its commitments in improving health in each of the communities in the service area, its continued staffing levels by department or facility, the impact of the medical foundation, its fulfillment of uncompensated care promises, and other areas determined by a real independent board. The monitor cannot be chosen by the hospital and must have access to any information deemed necessary, including baseline information prior to the culmination of the sale. Tenant must continue to recognize that the workers have the right to be represented by the union of their choosing, and there must be enforceable protections to ensure that there are not bad faith activities like Yale New Haven has undertook in the past. Furthermore, any proposed staffing cuts should be subject to an OCA hearing and approval. The board has a duty to identify and to share what was Plan B if this deal does not go through, and to go through more about what the other options that you chose not to undertake were. And I would not be fulfilling my duty if I did not point out Tenet's long, long track record of violating the law, which has resulted in an astounding level of fines. Over $1 billion in fines for ripping off taxpayers. Tripp professed it's all behind him. If it's true that they will not rip off consumers and taxpayers in Connecticut, then they should be willing to pay treble damages as part of the agreement to consumers, payers, and taxpayers if they were found to be engaged in further unscrupulous behavior. In closing, I want to reiterate the importance of the ECHN board doing their due diligence in consummating any deal, along with the Commissioner of Public Health and the Attorney General. Study after study that's not financed by the for-profit hospital industry have proven the adverse impact of both for-profit healthcare and in the consolidation of hospital industry on access, cost, and quality. This board, the Commissioner of Public Health, and the Attorney General have very important roles in protecting our communities, and we expect you to fulfill them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swan. Next, we have written testimony that was provided to us. First, Representative Timothy Larson provided a letter that we're going to ask Dr. O'Neill to read into the record.
Thanks, Dennis. Representative Larson was unable to attend, but he wanted his letter read into the record. The letter is addressed to the Honorable George C. Jepson, the Attorney General of the State of Connecticut, and the Honorable Jewel Mellon, the Commissioner of the Department of Public Health. I am pleased that Governor Malloy signed into law PA-14-168, an act concerning notice of acquisitions, joint ventures, affiliations of group medical practices and hospital admissions, medical foundations, and certificates of need. This legislation makes it possible for the potential transaction of Eastern Connecticut Health Network and the joint venture between Tenet Healthcare and Yale New Haven Health System to move forward. You are aware, as I, that many of Connecticut hospitals have expressed their concern of running out of options to remain sustainable in an ever-changing healthcare environment. This law provides ECHN with a credible option that will allow it to serve the communities east of the river for many years to come. It is important for state and federal public servants to ensure that our constituents have local access to quality healthcare that is affordable. While we must protect our citizens, we also have an obligation to support the efforts of our community hospitals, which are striving to continuously improve quality while reducing cost, but struggling with lower payments for services and continued plan cuts in state and federal reimbursements proposed by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. From my conversations with representatives of ECHN, Tenet, and Yale New Haven, I believe this proposed transaction will benefit patients, employees of ECHN, and the communities served by this healthcare system. Access to capital will allow ECHN to keep its two hospitals, Manchester Memorial and Rockville General, viable and efficient through the expansion of service lines, to upgrade its facilities and equipment to meet state and federal code requirements, and to remain flexible to quickly respond to patient needs and expectations. Therefore, I encourage the Office of Healthcare Access and the Office of the Attorney General to look favorably upon the proposed transfer of assets as described in the Certificate of Need Determination Letter recently filed by ECHN. Regards, signed Timothy Larson, State Representative, State of Connecticut.
Thank you, Dr. O'Neill. We have one more letter testimony, which will be read by Joy Dorn. It was provided and written by one of our corporators, Kai Cohen. Joy, would you mind?
This is a statement from Kai Cohen, who's been an ECHN corporator and is also the owner of the ShopRites in Manchester and East Hartford. As a corporator of ECHN, I have always been extremely impressed with the vision, intellect, and communication skills of Peter Carl and Dennis O'Neill. I am comfortable with their decisions regarding the ECH merger, and it's my hope that the company becomes more viable and successful as a result. As a business owner, I am keenly aware of the need for economies of scale. My organization's ability to partner with a larger entity allows us to stay in business, pass immense savings onto our customers, and be philanthropic to the greater Manchester community. The common thread that exists between ECHN and my business is that we both face a highly competitive marketplace. I truly understand the need for ECHN to adapt to a rapidly changing healthcare environment and fully support the merger so that we may go forward and keep quality healthcare in Greater Manchester. Respectfully submitted, Kai Cohen, owner ShopRite of Manchester in East Hartford.
Thank you, Joy. Nina, is there anyone else that signed up to testify this evening? No? With that, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. O'Neill.
ECHN has enjoyed caring for these communities for nearly 100 years, and the proposed transaction you reviewed tonight will continue to fulfill the mission of ECHN and provide high-quality, compassionate care to the communities we serve. Thank you all for your attendance, attention, and participation this evening. Thanks for coming, and have a good evening.